Hello, everybody. This is the Translation Confessional Podcast. Translation and Politics. Today we'll talk about a very important topic: politics in translation. Hoffa sat down with Nicolás Arrizaga, English and Spanish translator and interpreter at Pol Translations. He explained the crucial role of language professionals who assist politicians, campaigns, and political parties who wish to connect with an audience that speaks a foreign language. When it comes to working in politics, translators go beyond translating. We act as language advisors and transcreators to help craft a message to a completely different demographics than that of the original message in the source language. Considering that, the role of translators and interpreters in political campaigns and time in office is crucial to connect, bridge, and influence bilingual and non-native speaking constituents in their own language. And, if you'll be attending the American Translators Association Conference in Los Angeles this year, be sure to check his session, Political Translation, Speech Writing, Storytelling, and Discourse Analysis. His session will explore transcreation strategies that take into consideration the sociopolitical, intercultural, and ideological biases present in the target language's audience.
Have you heard of Newsly? It's an all-in-one super audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web and reads them to you. For the first time in ever, the entire web is now listenable, and you can find it all in one place. Browse articles about a variety of topics: sports, technology, business, science, languages. Newsly even has digital radio from different countries. They have podcasts in different languages, too. And yes, Translation Confessional is on their list as well. Download Newsly for free at www.newsly.me and use promo code TRANSCNF, which stands for Translation Confessional, to receive a 1-month free premium subscription. Check this episode's description to copy the link and promo code. Then, lay back as Newsly brings you the news, so you can stop scrolling and start listening.
So today I'm here with Nicolás Arrizaga, and he is a translator and interpreter who specializes in political translation. So I was really curious when I saw one of his posts, and I wanted to talk more about it because I had some components of politics in my translations, but I just was very fascinated by the idea of people that actually specialize in that area and what kind of projects they work with. So, Nicolás, if you could just introduce yourself and tell us how you started as a translator interpreter, that would be great.
Of course. So good morning, good evening, everyone. My name is Nicolás Arrizaga. I'm a political scientist. I got a bachelor and master's in political science as well as international studies. And I always had a deeply love for languages. I had the luck or the privilege, I guess, to go to a French school while growing up. So French was my second language. And by the time I was 11, the idea of the school would be to have kids fluent in French with native speakers. When I was 15, I came to the United States for my first time. And that's when I became familiar with English a little bit and started actually getting English added to, my language. And so when I graduated from political science, I was really interested in finding a way where I could combine both of my passions, both in English and Spanish, in a way that would be meaningful. And so I did discourse analysis as my, specialization when I was doing my master's. And so in that, I felt really in disadvantage because a lot of my classmates that were native speakers did a better job, obviously, in certain language skills in English. And so I've always felt like in a disadvantage in that way. But then when I started thinking about how I could apply this in a way that I could use my Spanish, you know, because I think I would have been, you know, better off if you know, I was in those competitive bases. So I did translation and interpreting with my, I've always been an advocate, and I've been advocated since I was 12 years old. And so when I, you know, I've always used translation and interpreting because of, you know, grant writing whenever we needed funds, and whenever we had international people coming into, from Cuenca, Ecuador. And so that is how I started with translation and interpreting, but never really thought of as a career, because back then Cuenca was not as famous as it is today for expats, for example, and for interpreting. Now it's, it could be a career in Cuenca as well. But then I was in Wyoming, where there's not as much of a diversity, I guess, that many other places in the States. And so these language components and these language skills were hidden for a little bit in that regard, in terms of what I could do in the political way. However, when I moved to Colorado, actually in 2020, I found a way in which I could contribute. You know, it was a way that I was understanding not only the, you know, the language and the academics probably, but also, you know, a little beyond that, because it was a political. And the first thing I thought, it was, I need a mentor. I need somebody that would teach me and guide me in how to become and, you know, develop these skills. And so when I started first looking at literature, you know, about political translation and how to use discourse analysis, narrative frameworks, and then different theories that could be applied directly in translation or interpreting, to, you know, to make your product a little more quality, let's say, in terms of what is the scope of your discourse, what is the scope of your marketing, or what are you trying to do with it. And so the idea of translation, you know, it's to convey a message, but the idea of political translation is see how does this message, you know, resonate with your audience, and what is the decision making after receiving this information. And so, for example, when we are doing campaigns, sometimes it's positive to have a, you know, bilingual message, one in English and one in Spanish, you know, in the same page. But sometimes it isn't. Sometimes, like, the fact that you just receive a message in Spanish, for example, or your native language, whichever this would be, you know, it resonates a little better, because one, neurolinguistically speaking, it responds to another part of the brain. You are reading with a different part of your brain. You're really communicating with almost your mom first, because that's where you learned it. And so the idea is to use language as a way of transmitting a message, but not necessarily have to do, you know, meaning to meaning, because not always, and as translators and interpreters know better, that we cannot always translate things. And the idea would be, what is the most equivalent thing politically and culturally relevant speaking to find a message that would convey what you're trying to say? So I'd say political translation in a way is mostly the background and the research that the demographics, the political research and the policy research that we do beforehand, to try to see who's our audience that we're delivering this to, and in which frameworks, in which scenarios are we're delivering this message. And so regardless if we're, you know, the most experienced translators and interpreters, sometimes we need, you know, method to the madness, right? So, like, sometimes we get used to a way of doing things that changing is a little harsh, but this is really training translators and interpreters to think in a different way when it comes to the decision making of word choice, right? So, because we are always, at the end of the day, the ones that are delivering the message. And so as interpreters and translators, you know, the word that we're choosing every 3 seconds, it's important, and it relies on people. And you know, in this case, in a political scenario, it will be the words of a candidate, you know? And so we have to be a little more mindful of how is the candidate looking and portraying his image and his message into the audience. So I guess I came back to the, you know, translation and interpreting industry very empty-handed, I'd say, because I couldn't find really people that were like doing this particularly. And I got really interested because a lot of I'm speaking about Spanish and about Latino communities because, you know, that's like the population that speaks to me. But, you know, in the industry, I've got requests for Vietnamese, for Chinese, Mandarin, or, you know, there's, you know, candidates want, and nowadays they are really trying to speak to diverse populations. And so we're trying to think about, as the United States, we are really the melting pot, like, you know, the what we thought about what it was. And so what it became after the years, you know, of, you know, first immigrants, first generation Americans, second generation Americans, and how they have been shaping the future of this country, and the way of bilingualism, or like sometimes when, you know, other cultures collide, there's three languages on the table. And so how do you put these languages and these cultures, because, you know, the cultural component in every language is the key part for like the whole work. And so that is really how I like to think about political translation, is as trying to see and understand, politically speaking, where you are and who you're speaking to. And that is very important. If I am translating for Latinos in Central Florida, I'm not going to be using the same words as I'm using for Latinos in New Mexico. These are completely different populations with different identities, with different prides, with different backgrounds. And so one, the border crossed them, and in the other, they crossed the border, or, you know. And so that makes a completely different shape and mindset and, you know, belonging. And, you know, one has maybe two passports, the other one only has the American one because they, you know, they've always been here. But they still speak the language, right? And so we need to think about all these cultural components about the language, right? And so I guess that wasn't that long answer, but that was, I guess, in a nutshell what political translation is.
No, perfect, because my follow-up question to how you got started was how you got started in political translations, but you came kind of the back way because you already had an interest and you were studying political science, and then you became a translator to combine your language skills and your knowledge. So that's perfect. And as you were talking about it, I was just thinking about how complex it must be because of a variety of countries that speak Spanish. So how to, like you said, cater to the target audience, because of course, Florida, New Mexico, California, the population is completely different. And I do like the fact that you're talking about how politics and translation and the Latino community, it's not just about people who have come here because of whatever reasons as immigrants, and then they became citizens, now they registered to vote, and now they can vote. It's not only about that, like you said, and I have friends, personal friends, that they say the same thing. The border crossed us. We've always been here. So my family goes generations and generations in this territory, and now it's the United States. So right. Historically, we have communities that have always been in what is now the U.S. territory, and they have other languages that they speak. And that also goes with indigenous languages. It goes with other different kinds of communities that have come here, like French in New Orleans or Dutch in Pennsylvania. So there's this variety of cultures and backgrounds that have to be taken into consideration when we're talking about the political process as well. Right. So what kind of projects do you work on more often? Because we think about election and, you know, like you said, having the political message when there's a candidate running for office. But do you only work more often during elections, or what do you work on after the election cycle, before the election cycle?
Sure. So I guess let's back up a little bit and let's try to think about what politics are in a general sense in the United States. Right. So we have two different ways of campaigning. The first one would be, you know, as you're saying, you know, elections and with candidates. And so, for example, a name becomes a movement. You know, there's people behind a name. And so a name becomes a brand. And so this brand has to speak to a certain audience, and this brand has to portray certain values. And so it's really about how you develop this personality, per se, right? And so what I'm trying to make, or not make, but have, you know, clients understand is like that in Spanish or in Portuguese or in Chinese or in Vietnamese, we have the exact same responsibility of creating an image and building an image and a political image in this particular audience. And so, as you said, in Spanish, we have so many countries that are, you know, represented here in the United States very well. And so who are we speaking to, right? In which ways are we speaking to them? You know, if I use a que chévere or un que padre, you know, between Mexico, Venezuela, Colombia, and Ecuador, right? I'm speaking to two different people. And just by using one word, they're like, oh, wow, yeah, they, you know, they're speaking to me now, right? So we're not speaking about plain language. We're speaking about, you know, language and use. And so for a candidate in particular, you know, yes, obviously every 2 years it's election cycles. And that's when they become interested in, okay, what are we saying to people? But also there's issue-based campaigns where, for example, women get together and they, you know, start this movement and they become this powerful thing. But also this powerful thing has a lot of money, right? And this money has to be managed somehow. And so this movement becomes, you know, one of these lobbying parties. Well, not parties, because they're not affiliated necessarily with a party. But they are affiliated with an ideology, right? And so their flag is like, you know, women rights or LGBTQ rights or, you know, guns, you know, you name it. But like a lot of people would fund these movements in order for them to nudge politics, right? And make things happen. And that's how we call lobbying, right? And so this is how lobbying also needs a movement. You know, also needs people behind it and needs. And so, for example, in the Spanish-speaking world, a really good example of these are the immigrant rights movements, right? So we need a lot of those things translated. We need a lot of those things to speak to people, to actually mobilize people, to actually make people aware. And not only aware, but, you know, hey, let's nudge you. So, like, we in political translation, we think about many ideas in the fact of, okay, what are the emotions that we're trying to look at? Is it hate? Is it love? Is what are we trying to portray? Somebody's a hero, as a victim. You know, what are these people going to feel right after either hearing or reading whatever you are trying to say? And so it's a lot of ways where you could use political translation and not necessarily in elections. But let me tell you that elections have way more, they like more this type of strategies, because this is when, you know, it's crucial for them on having the votes or not in this case, you know.
Yeah. And do you work with documents or more audiovisual? What kind of projects that come your way?
So let's say we work a lot with documents too. There's you know, pieces of mail that you receive. There's a lot of you know, documentation that actually need to be translated that are like pages and pages long. You know, the idea is we focus really on marketing and how you portray your identity and your campaign and everything. However, there's always the legal part, right? So there's always like how you being liable and how you're being, you know, consistent, you know, not only with your message, but also with all the legalese behind it. And so we need to understand that there's, you know, all sorts of populations reading or watching, or, you know, we're talking about millions of people. And so we need to be consistent. So we try to be, okay, we have the legal part and we have the political part. We work a lot with nonprofits as well. And so it's about seeing and understanding the text and trying to understand what the audience will perceive and think. And, you know, it really comes about the idea of, after reading this text or after receiving this information, what are they going to do, right? What are they going to look at? What are they going to Google? Like, you know, the idea is trying to understand the profile of the reader or the audience. It really depends on really the client and on what the projects have.
Okay. Yeah, as you're talking, I'm just thinking of million things that could stem from it, because the main connection that I would have with this kind of material, because I don't translate very political material, it's more governmental for like immigration assistance. I do that a lot. But okay. Thinking about political discourse and how to portray an image and choosing your words, the main thing that I can connect with, you know, 22 years ago, sitting there in class to study journalism and analyzing headlines from newspapers, right, or analyzing how the coverage was on TV or radio. So we learned so many things in political science class within journalism school that really applies to a lot of what you're saying, and it fascinates me. It's something that I do when I'm consuming the news, but I don't have this opportunity of choosing the words and knowing how to direct the discourse a certain way. And it's fascinating because it's almost like marketing. You're selling a product, right? And it just happens to be a candidate. It happens to be a platform. It happens to be a movement that deals with politics and will affect social, economic, and other spheres. But it's just fascinating how it also goes into transcreation, because like you were saying,
that's it exactly.
Because if you have to give a kind of example of what transcreation is, when like my students ask me, but what's the difference between translation and transcreation? Well, that's a great example of how you have to know your target audience, and you have to know, okay, this word will have an impact on this group or this group, and you have to choose it carefully and just decode the message and change the message in a way that it stays the same, because like I said, legal, you know, they have a whole process of creating the original in English, for example, but you have to know how to have that message come across to the target audience and create the same feeling, the same reaction, the same call to action. If it's to donate, if it's to volunteer, if it's to vote for someone or support a platform. So it's extremely fascinating. I really like what you're saying. And what are your thoughts on accessibility during election? Because not to go into too many details or to explore this further politically, but otherwise this episode we have like, you know, 3 hours or something, but there's so much now going on in the election process. And I'm also thinking about Brazil, because we are in an election year right now, and thinking about, we've always been using the machines to vote, and now they're talking about, let's go back to paper voting. So there's so much information that goes around, and even people who are consuming the original product in English are having questions and have to research and have to form an opinion about it. So how do you see this kind of accessibility in language to bring the information to audiences that don't speak English, because we're talking about here the United States and the American process?
I think we have to understand first of, you know, talking about the case of the United States particularly, you know, we don't have an official language, right? Talking about, you know, as you said, Ecuador, for example, we do have Spanish as the official language, you know, recognized in the Constitution among other indigenous languages. However, you know, here in the States is, you know, a language of custom, right? Like, it was the majority who spoke English, and then the majority, you know, wrote the Constitution, and so therefore just became the language, right? Then we think about the civil rights movement and, you know, what we're thinking about discrimination and everything. So all of these policies really make it a little more inclusive with the Civil Rights Act. So we're trying to not discriminate for national origin or language or anything like that, right? And so when we're trying, or we think about elections, particularly, we need to think about what do we perceive or what do we conceive in when we think about elections, right? And so, for example, one of the biggest things are that I can think of, you know, as a political scientist is the dual party system in the United States and the multi-party system, you know, I'm not going to say everywhere else, but basically in many other places. For example, the idea of you being affiliated within a political party and, you know, participating within the primaries of that political party, and then you're going to like the general elections, and then understanding what the electoral college is and how these states have a weight or not depending on their population. You know, it's a really complex concept to just say vote for me, right? And so like, how do you say all I just said, you know, just to start this and a little intro of American politics, to say vote for me and this is how he's going to work. So the idea of voting, you putting your trust in somebody to represent you in government. And so that's the idea of representative democracy, right? And so we understanding that, you know, in an American context, needs to have, you know, a lot of real notes or like, you know, put, you know, saying like, this is how it's going to work. Again, we're not gonna try to explain the whole system because that would be like, you know, pages and pages and pages. But we need to, you know, chew a little bit of the content and try to like, you know, put in a way that would be relevant and meaningful. For them to understand a certain concept or a certain thing that you're trying to portray in these documents. So when we think about accessibility, you know, sure, you know, I can translate beautifully, you know, theory to theory, you know, of election material to election material, right? But then when it goes to our audiences, you know, what are audiences really getting out of this material, right? Because, you know, I put as an example of the courts, you know, when we are interpreting into Spanish, we're creating and like fabricating a new, you know, system of the courts because a jury, at least in Ecuador, doesn't exist. So for me, just like to explain this jury thing, because, you know, you cannot explain when you are like, you know, in court, you're just, you know, you say jurado, right? But there's no explanation, right? So that is why there's so many problems with accessibility with, you know, like the legalese and everything too. So it's the same idea here in the political way. So what we think about here is political cultures, how they shape and start and become decide to vote for a certain candidate or not. And nowadays is a little more complex because of social media and all the algorithms that let us see only what we like and what we agree with and people that are okay with our ideas and legitimize our ideas. So in this era, poor word choice is really important because if I'm going to the other side and they've never heard these words before, it will not make any sense to them. But if I come to my same side and like I speak the same language, this is going to be so much easier. So even in ideologies, we have different languages that we're speaking, you know, within the same language. And so we need to think about all of those components in each one of our languages, right? In each one of our populations and how that is portraying, how it is developing. And in political science, we think about, for example, the voters, right? People who have voted Democrat for all their lives and they're in their 60s. People who have voted Republicans for all their lives and they're in their 60s. That data really shows that they're not going to really change their decision or decision-making. It doesn't matter, you know, what the mega Iraqi campaign I'm doing because they are done. You know, they know who we're going to vote for and who is their party that are going to listen to them and who, you know, is speaking more their language again. And so when we think about that in other languages, we need to actually, you know, go both places and see, okay, how am I going to speak to these people that are Republican you know, in Spanish, or who these people are, you know, Republican in Spanish, or Democrat, sorry, in Spanish. So there's a lot of language components in each of the populations that you're trying to target, and your word choice is really what it's heavy on this. So understanding the political culture within accessibility, it's really, really important. Because of what you're trying to explain, if that is what you're trying to mean with accessibility, right? Like a meaningful understanding of the text, or just translating a text for the sake of saying, sure, like, you know, we're gonna include them and, you know, follow the rules or, you know, whatever, but not really doing a meaningful connection. So that's really what we try to focus on, and what are the bridges that we're trying to build and how they look like, and are they pretty or not pretty? How long are they gonna last, right? So that's a little bit of a civil engineering translation, I guess.
Yeah, it's so multi-layered, because it's not just about the product in this case, it's not about the audience, it's about just really persuasion. It's just something that we always heard in journalism school, it's convincing the hearts and minds and bringing them to your side. So yeah, it's just completely complex, like you said, especially in a system like we have in the United States. And I voted for the first time in 2020, and I have to say, I, you know, speak English, I could read all the materials, but still I had to understand, why did my ballot for the primaries now look different than my husband's? Because we are registered differently. As an independent, as a Democrat, you get different ballots. Because he mentioned, we have our neighbor running for a city council, did you vote for him? And I'm like, he wasn't on my ballot, because he is set up as a different kind of candidate that I wouldn't see in my ballot, in my husband's side, his. So it's so complex, even for people that have access to the information. So I can only imagine for people that don't have where to look for that information, because they're not comfortable with English, they're comfortable with another language, and it's hard to understand the entire process and be an informed voter, right? An informed citizen, acting in your community, acting in your city, state, at a federal level. It's very complex.
Correct, it is. You know, when I finished grad school, there were some things, you know, still in the American political system that I'm still, you know, trying to decipher, and like I read a little more, and I'm constantly reading to try to like go a little through really with all these systems. And you know, there you can spend your life reading on each state, you know, all the political history that there is in each one of them. And, you know, you will, there's always changes, and, you know, you will never completely understand what's happening. So as we say, as an interpreters and translator, it's a never ending education for us, right? And so we really are looking at, you know, all the things on the, you know, the components that a political consultant would look at, a political strategist, a political communicator. And we really portray that into the other language, and our delivery is, you know, of the product that's interpreting and translation. So we really get to work with smart people, like in neuroscience, neurolinguistics, you know, behavior, political science, psychology, translation, interpreting. They all bring, you know, their something to the table that is meaningful to the conversation. And you know, it's always the projects are, you know, sometimes for a really particular, really narrow area, but sometimes we're like looking at a whole state. And so it depends on, you know, the project and the complexity of it, but it's always like a little bit of a challenge. It's always a little bit different, it's always a little bit of a different ideology, it's always a different client, so that keeps it a little spicy.
Wow, yeah, I can only imagine. And just one last question that I had, because I needed to understand, if you go into from Spanish into English as well, and if you ever had to try to contextualize the diversity of Latin American politics to an English context, because I translate from Portuguese to English as well. And there's one example that was circling my head as I was preparing to talk to you about this topic. And it was actually for subtitling. It was a series from Brazil set in the 90s. And they have, you know, two very opposite kind of sides, like the law enforcement and the kind of the, you know, people breaking the law, but they're trying to be like, you know, they're the good guys with the social justice and that kind of thing. So it's very clear what people creating the show was trying to convey, because the law enforcement uses some kind of wording that the other side of the story doesn't. So the one example that I can give you more concretely is when the law enforcement character mentions the 1964 event in Brazil. So let's just put event as something neutral. On his side, from law enforcement, from someone that supported what happened, he would say that it was a movement. It was a movement. And from the other side, from the social side, as the show was trying to show, they say it was a coup, a military coup, a takeover of the military and the government in Brazil. So how can you explain this to an American audience that would be watching a show with subtitles in English and not get the nuance of this character chose to say the 1964 movement when everybody else would say it was a military coup? So luckily, I was working on the translation itself. I was working on a template that was preparing other translators to come in and translate from Portuguese to French, German, Spanish. If they don't speak Portuguese, they would read the template in English and get some context to adapt their subtitles. So I had notes. I had notes to add to the subtitles, so it was perfect to just give that context and have links, go to Wikipedia and research this. So I was just leaving these breadcrumbs for other subtitlers, right? But what if you have to do something like that and you can't add translation notes? You can't add, you know, okay, click here to learn more. How do you deal with that kind of challenge?
You know, I always like to, whenever we are talking about, you know, subtitling or something like that, to put the country in parentheses. So, for example, if I put English United States, I would try to use something on the wording that would, you know, would show something very militarized, for example, and then, you know, try to, like, you know, use some sort of, you know, really quickly, like, three sentences of, like, otherwise known as, for example. So, like, they would also be like, okay, so what is happening here? So then, you know, within the subtitling after that, you know, you kind of like pinch on, like, you know, what is, you can still communicate with your audience. And so I would say, for example, like, but if an English person is watching the exact same thing and I use a very particular word for the United States, it's not going to make sense. And it will not, you know, it will not have the exact same idea, right? So the idea is really to understand your audience, and in this case, to try to be as narrow as you can. And so in political culture, at least, we do have national identities. We all do. And so we all have, either we like it or not, but it's a way where we identify at least with a passport or with some sort of thing, you know. It's beyond our language, it's beyond our cultures. It's really, you know, the political history that has happened that, you know, that led to some territory become what it is today, right? Little or big or whatever it is. And so you have a way of playing with this political history with this particular audience. So if, you know, again, if you're playing with subtitles United States, and then try to, like, say, okay, what do Americans relate to? And obviously, you know, there's a lot of audience that watch in English and prefer American English, but, you know, you can never just, you know, say, hey, I'm gonna be 100%, you know, correct, and that's it. Because there's jokes still, you know, that we can never translate, and as much as we try, as much as we could be, as much as, you know, these cultural ambassadors and make justice to what is happening, you know, there's a lot of things that get lost. And I think we need to be a little okay with this idea, but in political translation, at least, we need to know what is a must be in there and what we are okay with losing in the translation, you know, and, you know, making this and taking into consideration, and what are we looking into at more to actually put into the text than, you know, what we're trying, and we're okay with, you know, letting slide. But these things that we're okay with letting slide, we always try to consult with our client and try to see, like, okay, this is how this is not gonna happen. Sometimes it's a little annoying for them because they don't understand a lot of these language components. So we try to make, like, you know, a whole thing all together and try to, like, go once and, you know, try to one meeting. But it's all about communication with your client, and at the end of the day, they are the ones that are trying to do or trying to reach audiences, right? And so at the end of the day, you're just the one that can do so much for them, right?
Exactly. So. And summarizing it, I think that's one of the areas, you know, and legal, of course, that you can't take sides as a translator. Just because you think that this ideology or this movement, if you like it or you don't like it, you can't say, I'll put this word here because that's how I feel. You have to really get the intent of the original material. If they're saying this, you have to just go for that message. If you side with one side or the other, you should just not take the project if you disagree with it.
Correct.
Instead of, you know, oh, I don't like what they're saying in the original, I wouldn't use this word, so I'll change it. You can't. You have to be completely neutral, and you have to just serve the purpose of, first of all, informing the target audience, and second of all, being true to the intentions of the original. So it's kind of a selfless act, and you have to really be just a vessel in a way,
you
to
know,
just let it go and get the message through.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because, you know, I wanted to talk about this, but I don't know exactly how to portray it, right? We all have biases. We all do. We all come from somewhere. We all have or a history, or we all have, you know, our ideology. And really in the editing part, because we need to do our own editing and we have additional editing. But the idea to look for in the editing is my ideology portraying in here? Is that the star of the text? Or is it the ideology of the client who has, you know, their intentions with this text is dot, 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 dot. Right. So what I always try to think about as our work is that we are as lawyers, right? Sometimes we're public defenders, or sometimes we are DA. Sometimes we're like, you know, obviously there's ethics to this. And so if you're strongly against something, you cannot do the job, period. Like, you are going to do a terrible job, probably intentionally, or change the register, change the tone, something a little bit here or there that the quality of the project, just because you disagree, will, you know, make it not worth it for your client, right? So what we really need to be a little professional in this and really think about, for example, if we are strongly in this side, or strongly in this side, oh, okay, this is going to be my client list, right? So only in this side because I cannot stand the other side, right? Or if I'm going to be in the middle because I don't mind, or, you know, whatever it is that you decide to do with your clients, as in any other field, you decide who your clients are, you know, and the client relation that you start having is like, okay, who pays you on time and who you decide to work with after and despite of, you know. So all of those, these little things come into account, but in this case, it's more like, ideology-wise, how am I okay with every word that is coming out of his mouth or her mouth, right? And so how much is this candidate going to hear my advice? Because there's so much we can do. Yeah, you know, like, there's ways and times where I've said, you know, this is gonna backfire on you. Like, don't do it. Like, I don't care. I just needed to translate it. I don't, you know.
Okay.
You know, so at the end of the day, we need to be a little more comfortable that our work is speaking on behalf of somebody else, right? So there's so many theories and so many things that we could do, but at the end of the day, we need to have a clear communication with the client and say, okay, this is really how it looks like. I mean, a lot of people are really comfortable with, okay, do it, it's done, and, you know, send and, like, print, woohoo, it's over with. But sometimes the more communication, the more understanding they get, the more awareness they are, And, you know, even the payment gets a little better because they actually see what is the work that are you actually doing, and what it entitles, and, you know, how complex it might be, and how they would never really get to that point without you. I guess really in this is, you know, political communication is key for, you know, inside and outside. So I don't know.
I think you just summarized perfectly how to position yourself as a specialist and be necessary to your clients. Because like you said, if they understand that you're not just, you know, a walking dictionary, that you're actually Correct. Adding value to their message and you're helping them communicate effectively with the other side, with the other part of their audience that doesn't speak their native language, that's how we become indispensable, because then they know that, oh, I need this person to help me, and this person will be my voice for this target audience. Perfect. Well, thank you so much. This was an amazing conversation that just opens up so many things that people can think about of how to specialize in what they like. And there's so many areas that you can go to into politics. So I really appreciate you just sharing your experience.
I would like just to invite people. I'm going to be presenting at the American Translator Association Conference in Los Angeles in October. So if you're going, I would really encourage you to go to the session. It's called Political Translation, Speech Writing, Discourse Analysis, and Storytelling. I'm really trying to dive into the transcreation portion and how to try to think in the different ways to portraying your text. If you're interested, and if this interview got you interested in political translation, there's so many things and many ways that you could get more information about it. So thank you Rafa for inviting me.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading more about your presentation in October, and I really think that people are going to be flocking to your presentation, or they should, because it's just fascinating. They'll learn so much about transcreation and communication, being effective in what you do, and being as much as we can unbiased. So
Perfect.
Thank you so much for your work and for sharing your story.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Okay, you too.
Send us an email at rlombardino@wordawareness.com or leave a voice message on the Translation Confessional Anchor page. If we get enough feedback and voice messages, we can go back to this subject and post a special podcast episode with everyone's opinion on this very same theme. By the way, our anchor page is anchor.fm/translation-confessional. We look forward to hearing from you. Stay tuned for weekly episodes and subscribe to Translation Confessional through your favorite podcast app.